welcome to episode 11 of The Tangles, official companion podcast to BeneathTheTangles.com. I'm your host, Charles. Wait, something's not quite right here. Yes, despite my best impression of him, you'll notice that our regular host, Japes, is not hosting this episode. If you tuned in to our last episode of The Tangles, you'll know that he's in Japan for a summer internship. So today I'll be hosting this episode, and JP will actually be our guest, and we'll continue our unique summer series of podcasts. For this episode, I'll be moderating with questions for JP from you, our readers. Welcome, JP.
Oh, happy to be here, as always.
Very good. All right, well, I'll go ahead and start us off with some announcements. We do have things forthcoming on the blog, but nothing quite ready to announce yet except for this piece of big news. We've added a new member, Casey, who is maybe best known to our readers, yes, as a writer and administrator of Geeks Under Grace, has joined our team. So we're really excited to have her on board. There's an introductory post up on our website right now. I hope you'll take the time to read it and get to know her a little better. And that being our only announcement, I'll move us on to our next section, which is Otaku Diet.
Otaku Diet.
For those of you new to the podcast, Otaku Diet is a portion where we tell the audience what we're feeding on. And this could include anime, games, visual novels, manga, and all sorts of other things. So I'll go with you, JP, first. What are you getting to watch, or are you getting to watch some anime while you're in the proper time zone?
Sure, yeah. I'm after my schedule finally calmed down, I managed to catch back up with a few currently running anime. But honestly, it's been a good season, but it's not been an outstanding season. So I've been enjoying everything I'm watching, but I haven't been like desiring to rewatch anything. So I don't know if there's really anything of note, except Ore Monogatari, or My Love Story, might be my favorite of the season. I'm not sure. Hard to say. Other than that, I've been actually watching through... on the plane ride, I watched through Haruhi Suzumiya. The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya.
For the first time?
Second time. It's been a while.
Okay.
sorry. And then recently been watching through Samurai Champloo. And I'm realizing that I need to go back and revisit some shows I haven't seen for a while, because there are some spectacular classics out there that I've kind of forgotten about.
Yeah, Samurai Champloo is a very good series, for instance. I'm only watching a couple series this summer. I'm watching My Love Story, but I've kind of lost interest in it a little bit, but I continue to watch it because my wife really enjoys it, so we're watching it together. It is a good reason. The other show that I'm watching, if you've kept up with the blog, all you listeners or readers out there, is Oregairu, or my teenage romantic comedy Snafu 2. I'm pretty much a mega fan of that show, so I'm really enjoying it. Primarily because we're getting to see the characters really struggle as they're growing. And I've enjoyed it so much that I'm reading the light novel translations, which is a big deal for me because I really dislike light novels. It's interesting that you brought up Haruhi, because I was really, really into that series back when. And I read a few of the light novels, and I just dislike pretty much every moment of it. It's just not for me. I'm enjoying the Oregairu light novels a lot. And I'm also working through Planetarian, which I mentioned on the last podcast, and I don't think I've read any more of it since then. But I guess that counts as still working through it. I hope to get back into it. And I'm reading a couple manga right now. I'm trying to keep up with Silver Spoon, which I'm really enjoying. And I'm trying to catch up with Attack on Titan. So besides that, is there anything else you're consuming, JP?
I forgot that I picked up my... Well, I've read a couple manga here and there, but I'm not really super fond of manga, to be honest. But I did catch up to Yamada-kun and the Seven Witches and Nisekoi. And I've realized it's kind of fun to have just a couple and just like be able to check in every once in a while and check up on the latest chapters. It's fun in its own way, even though I'm still not a huge fan of the medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the monthly manga because there's a little bit less pressure to keep up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, for the sake of time, let's go ahead and move forward to the main event, which is the Q&A session with you and about your experiences in Japan. Yeah. So, you know, thanks to all, first of all, who submitted questions in short order for this event. We appreciate it. And in fact, we received far more than we anticipated. So that's really great. We'll try to get to as many as we can. But I'll go ahead and start us off with the most important question of all, I think, which is from your friend, Will. Here's the question. Is it hard being devilishly handsome in Japan?
Oh, man, you don't know the half of it. oh, man, no. I've joked with people. I'm decidedly very average looking. but, you know, if you're a Caucasian male, being average looking in the West makes you look pretty above average in Japan. It's pretty convenient, I'll be honest.
Okay. I actually got more out of that question than I thought I would. Okay. Actually, Will had a few other very good questions, so I'll go ahead and continue with some of his.
Sure.
Are people amused by your accidental breaches in Japanese etiquette?
You know what? I think Japanese people are, for the most part, very used to Westerners continuously breaching Japanese etiquette. I will say, though, where I am working right now used to be an all-girls school, and the department I'm in is still, like, 95% girls. And girls get a huge kick out of breaches in etiquette, I find. So, yes, it does happen pretty frequently, especially because my speaking ability is awful in Japanese.
Well, that kind of sounds like an anime a little bit.
You know what? It's in some ways a dream come true.
All right. Well, how is your Japanese, you know, speaking of your speaking skills, how's your Japanese improved from study, you know, which you were doing a lot of study here in the States, to actual usage?
Yeah, Will especially knows my study habits. It's kind of ironic, even though I've been here, I've improved in certain areas, but my Japanese has not been improving as much as I would like. Unfortunately, and this happens with a lot of people, but a lot of people come to Japan as English teachers, and when you're an English teacher, especially as a native speaker, they expect you to use a lot of English. And once you get kind of in English mode, it's hard to get out of it. So now I know whenever people say, when you go study abroad, try not to hang out with people from your country. now I know why, because, I mean, once you start, it's hard to stop, and once you're in that, once you're stuck in that loop, it's very difficult to actually improve on the language of the country where you're staying.
Well, hang out with some more Japanese people.
Yeah.
JP.
Ganbaru.
All right. Well, we have a question from Philip from Facebook, who asks, what's been the most pleasant experience on your, or I'm sorry, most pleasant surprise on your stay?
Well, there've been a lot of surprises, pleasant and not. The most, I guess this is kind of a really general answer, but the most pleasant one is the hospitality I've been receiving. And I know Japan has a fairly positive reputation for good hospitality, but I know even talking to a lot of people I know who came to Japan, they kind of were dropped in Japan cold turkey with very little support, and that has not been my experience at all. I know I've had some things that are very difficult and confusing as a foreigner, where Japanese people just kind of expect me to figure it out. But generally speaking, I've had professors and friends who are willing to drive me places, and they'll buy me food because they know my budget. They invite me to things that normally people in my position wouldn't get invited to. It's been wonderful, and I feel very privileged and blessed to be in that situation.
That's great. I definitely hear that people who return from Japan miss the people most of all. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. Let's actually get into a little bit about culture. We had a question from Lady Teresa Christina of her self-named blog, which you can view at vintageinmyveins.wordpress.com. She asks, I was wondering, to what extent are the themes we live so much in anime, such as redemption, perseverance, and commitment, practiced in Japanese culture and everyday life?
Well, to use those three examples, What were they? Redemption, Perseverance, and Commitment?
Correct.
Okay, Perseverance and Commitment are, I would say, now this is just my two cents, I'm no expert by any means, I would say Perseverance and Commitment, especially Commitment, are hugely respected in Japanese culture. You can see that in the work culture with its ridiculously long hours, unpaid overtime, so on and so forth. And you definitely see that in regular everyday life and just how people approach not just their work, but their extracurricular activities. Redemption, on the other hand, I'll be honest, that's something that I really only see within the Christian circles here. Japanese bosses tend to be very, what's the best way to put this? overly strict with the newbies, more so than I'm used to seeing in the United States. And in that way, like, I don't know. Japan's such a shame-based culture. It's kind of like you do something wrong, you take it, and if you're the one who's responsible, I mean that's why you hear about so many presidents stepping down after a big mistake. They don't. The Japanese way of taking responsibility isn't trying to redeem yourself and make it better. Your way of redeeming yourself is quitting. And saving face. So that one, I don't know if I have an answer for. But, yeah, perseverance and commitment, absolutely. See that very clearly.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a thirst for redemption, since we do see that theme come up a lot in anime. Because of lack of grace, perhaps, in a lot of situations in the culture. So
yeah, as a brief aside, I've often heard anime, especially slice of life anime, referred to as kind of the escape from the humdrum of Japanese society.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. I get that. So moving on, Jamie of jamietalksanime.wordpress.com asks, how receptive are the Japanese foreigners? You mentioned this a little bit earlier. Is it a mixed response, or are most people friendly?
Yeah, that's going to change everywhere you go. The city where I am is kind of somewhere in this strange in-between of rural, which is where you'd be more... foreigners are less common in rural areas, and so you're probably more likely to get those strange reactions. So this city's somewhere in between that and then, like, big urban sprawling Tokyo area where foreigners are all over the place. But I've never gotten a negative reaction for being a foreigner, if that answers your question. It basically ranges from positively curious to just indifferent. And I think the indifference mostly comes not from not liking foreigners, but just being shy, not wanting to, just assuming that I speak solely English and not wanting to venture into the unknown of the language.
Okay, well, that's good. Here's a question that's related to religion. JD, who didn't leave a URL, asks, and I'm combining a few questions here. How exactly are Christians perceived and treated in Japan? Are Christians looked upon with disdain when mentioning Jesus Christ, or is there a sort of tolerance or even curiosity?
Again, this is going to change depending on the area where you are and the people you talk to. So I have a very, very biased view, having only spent significant time in one area of Japan, though I have traveled to others. But I would say kind of my general blanket statement is that the Japanese respect Christianity and they respect Christians. And I guess in a way they're kind of curious about the religion, but they really don't care enough to pursue it. So it's not like the United States where it's so polarized. It's like you have diehard Christians and diehard atheists and they just, butt heads constantly. You don't really have that here. It's just more like, sure, maybe I'll visit your church sometime, and then they visit, and they're like, yeah, not really for me, and then they just don't come back, but they'll still talk to you, no disdain. The area where I am, though, is one of the most conservative areas of Japan, and conservative, I guess, ironically, at least in my mind, when I think conservative fundamentalist Baptist. But in Japan, conservative has the opposite meaning of conservative fundamentalist Shinto Buddhist. So you are more likely to find people who not just don't care about Christianity, but actively believe in a religion that opposes it, more or less. I shouldn't say oppose. They're not necessarily negative about it, but they definitely don't believe in the God of the Bible, and they definitely believe in some other sort of supernatural force. But anyway, all that said, I've never really had any negative interactions about it. Then again, I've been interacting with a lot of Christians too, so again, there's that bias.
Well, there you go. And along the lines of still speaking about religion, Matthew of oldblindelephant.com asks, what are Christian worship services like in Japan when compared to American worship services?
Well, I can't remember how much of this I mentioned in the last podcast episode, so bear with me if I start speaking a little redundantly. But first of all, the big difference is they're small. The biggest one I've been to probably had maybe 100 people, and that's the biggest church in the area by a large margin, I believe. It varies, of course. I'd say generally churches in Japan tend to be, well, okay, I should say churches in Kanazawa that I've experienced tend to be a lot of older people who very much like tradition. And it's this way with some of these kinds of churches in the U.S. too. So they have organ music, they have their set hymns, not so much up on liturgy unless you go to a Catholic church, but they do have kind of the same repetition. there's a certain time for everything in the service. In that way, I guess that's kind of reflective of Japanese culture and how much they revere tradition. I have attended a Pentecostal church. That felt very much more similar to contemporary services I've experienced in the States, with the exception of it being more charismatic than what I'm used to. But it's funny, I always kind of feel like the worship here is either super traditional hymns and organ, or like a few years behind, like what my contemporary worship services were like several years ago. But the main thing about it, and I would extend the worship experience into this, is the sense of community. Since most of the churches are very small, and they often eat together after the service on Sundays and then do other activities together because it's smaller and it's easier to do that with the whole congregation, there's definitely much more of a sense of connection with other people you're attending with than a lot of large churches in the States.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before, but certainly in my experience growing up in Korean churches here is that we always ate a meal after service. So when I started going to a non-Korean church, I thought it was very odd that they didn't eat after service. Yeah. Even my church right now, which is mostly Korean Americans, they don't eat at the church, but they all go have a meal afterwards. So
yeah, you know, a lot of American churches, people go out to eat after church together, which I guess is the closest equivalent. But I am gonna really miss that experience when I go back to the States, because it's really nice being able to just, like, you sit through the service together and then you all go eat together at the same place. I don't know. Really solidifies the relationship to me.
So you Christians listening to the podcast, change your church. Eat together afterwards in your fellowship hall. It's a good experience. And speaking of food, let's go on to the important stuff, which is food. I think most of our questions had to do with Japanese cuisine. No surprise there. So let's jump into it. Chris at iamchrislam.tumblr.com asks, how accurate is anime's representation of anime food? Does it present itself the same as anime, or is it like American McDonald's menu pictures? And he gives the example of the cake is a lie.
Not exactly sure what I'm supposed to make of that example. I mean, obviously knowing the reference, but honestly, it's pretty accurate, I would say. If there's one phrase that I've heard describe Japanese society, it's form over function, and that definitely includes food. Very, very much emphasis is put on making sure it looks presentable. And yeah, I actually eat most of my lunches, well, 5 days a week at the school cafeteria, and it's, yep, pretty much what you see in anime. And I see students bring in their bento boxes. Yeah, it's pretty cool. In fact, if you've ever seen Angel Beats, this is the first example I think of. You've seen Angel Beats, right, Charles?
I was thinking of this example while you were speaking, so.
Well, you know how, all right, well, how do they get their meals in Angel Beats?
Are we talking about the vending machines?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, do you want to explain or should I?
No, please, go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, you see in Angel Beats, when you want your lunch, they have vending machines kind of lined up, and you go up, you put your money in, you hit the meal you want, and then it spits out a ticket. And then you go up to the counter, you put your ticket down, then you get your meal from the cafeteria. That's exactly how this cafeteria works. I'm assuming that's how most school cafeterias in Japan work as well. So, I mean, it's pretty accurate, like pretty darn accurate.
I'm just so envious of the students in Japan who get to eat that food all the time, you know.
Some of them are envious of us Americans, so I guess it's twofold.
You think so for like our cafeteria, like wrapped up burgers and pizza and so forth?
There's one professor here who studied in the United States for a couple of years and has visited several times since then. And he constantly tells me how much he's looking forward to eating at a school cafeteria when he visits the States this year.
Oh, wow.
The main difference is not, well, Japanese food is great. Like, generally speaking, Japanese food is delicious. But the serving sizes are smaller, and they don't have all-you-can-eat school cafeterias like very much like we do in the States. And I'm definitely looking forward to getting some Southern-style breakfasts when I return.
You know, we have here in the States, or here in Austin, we have a Samsung plant. And when we have people that are working there part-time that come to our church or just traveling through, we always get to the food and how envious we all are that their cafeterias serve Korean food on a daily basis. I mean, just, you're going to miss it when you get back here, the Asian food.
I'm sure I will.
Jamie asks, actually, this one's a little funny. Does everyone really eat with chopsticks? Do forks ever make an appearance?
Yeah, everyone eats almost everything with chopsticks except for the occasional spoon. I will say I have spotted a few forks, and that's not just
heathens.
Well, there are Western style meals that you eat with a fork and knife, but that's actually not even what I'm talking about. But they're like Big Boy is a really popular restaurant chain in Japan, and it's American style food, but I say that with air quotes. It's like Japanized American food, but you can't eat it with chopsticks. It's just impossible. You have to use a fork and knife because it's like just big burger patties, and you can't cut them without a steak knife. However, I have spotted a couple students bringing their bentos and eating them with these tiny little forks, like these tiny little adorable forks. But they've all been girls, and like I said, the forks are adorable. They're like tiny and pink and have like anime characters on them.
Oh, how Japanese. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, moving on. Jordan of Warriors at the disco.tumblr.com. All these URLs are so creative. What foods are you looking forward to trying? What foods were you looking forward to trying, and is there anything that you haven't tried yet that you want to before you leave?
I want to try natto. I still haven't had a chance. Last time I came to Japan, I didn't have a chance either. So I don't know if I'll like it, but I sure as heck am going to try to like it.
Can you explain to everyone what natto is?
Oh, yeah. Natto is fermented, is it soybeans?
Right.
Yeah, fermented soybeans. That's really what it's just like this super stringy, like, very uniquely textured food. You very bad smelling and very polarizing in the taste department. There's a very popular saying that 50% of Japanese people love it and 50% of Japanese people hate it. And there's basically no in between.
What's the favorite food that you've had since you've been to Japan?
You know what? I've liked everything so far, but I will say I do not like nori very much, which is a shame. I think it's because I got food poisoning on some food with nori in it back in the States a couple of years ago. But like nori is on everything. Nori is a type of seaweed. It's like their onigiri, the rice balls are wrapped in it. It's like thrown in miso soup. They sprinkle it on noodles. It's all over the place. So it's kind of a shame that I don't really like it that much. But
it's like fundamental to almost all Asian cuisine, actually. Yeah, we eat it here in my house, I mean, like 2 or 3 times a week and various things. So,
well, I'm getting used to it. But, you know, I really, really like Japanese curry, and that's kind of a lame answer because it's such a cheap and easy food, and like everyone eats curry, Japanese curry in Japan, but it is so incredibly good. Like, it's so cheap, it's so delicious.
Easy to make.
It's just wonderful. It's easy to make too. I still have 10 little single serving frozen bags of curry in my freezer from what I made like a month ago. And it's still, it's like, I look forward to microwaving it and eating it. It's still delicious.
You know, before we spoke today here on the podcast, you know, I mentioned to you that I was going to the Korean market to buy some tofu. I bought some for a dish my wife is making, but I bought another firm tofu because I was watching, I was going through Ouragairu again this week, the first season. And there's this episode where they're making curry, and they're talking, they're waxing nostalgic about how their mom used to put fried tofu in their curry. And I was like, oh, I've never done that. And we're planning to make curry next week. So I'm going to put some fried tofu in and try that out. So yeah, curry's great. Easy. Yummy. That's good stuff. Yeah. I'll let you know. Okay. Well, let's move on from food. And let's talk about the other big topic, which is anime, Japan's export to the world. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you two questions that kind of go hand in hand. Jamie asked, is there anything big Americans might misunderstand about the Japanese culture because of a trope in anime? And JD asked, are there any differences in Japanese culture and anime in terms of how Japanese culture is displayed? So any misunderstandings that we might have from having, you know, our view of Japan colored by cartoons.
Well, let me think through this systematically in my mind. One thing I do want to note that is actually not a difference, but it is very accurate. Well, no, it is a difference too, but it has a seed of accuracy in it, is Japanese girls really do wear mini skirts like all the time. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, if you don't,
so it's not fan service. This is not fan service. This is accurate representation of how the Japanese people are.
If you don't see like 80% of their legs, like it's unusual. No, I mean, there are some girls who wear pants too, but it's, I mean, short skirts and short shorts are just all over the place, especially during the summer. And then I've even high school girls do roll up their skirts a little bit so that they're shorter. Now, I do say that with the asterisk that, generally school uniform skirts are not as short as they are in anime. But girls do, the accurate part is, girls do often roll up the skirts a little bit so that they are shorter. But often the skirts go down like to the knees or past the knees, generally pretty modest as far as uniforms are concerned. So yeah, that was one of the first things that stuck out to me when, especially here at a college where there is no dress code and it's just short skirts everywhere, especially because it's 95% girls.
This is what a boy notices when we ask the question about anime.
Yeah. You're right. Okay, so as far as differences, girls do not run to school with toast in their mouth.
What?
Right. Right, I know, like, everyone thinks that now. I'm not even really sure how you do that. It's, like, so inconvenient. No, but I guess the main thing that I think about is really Japanese culture is not fun. Like, it's kind of a sad truth, but it's the prevailing reason why anime is so out there at least my theory, and I think many people agree with me, is it's like an escape for Japanese people, because Japanese culture is just so not fun at all. And that is such a huge misconception when people watch slice of life anime. It's like, yeah, there is accuracy in the slice of life anime, but notice that what you see in a slice of life anime is only the fun stuff they're doing. You don't see the hours they spend in class, the hours they spend studying. Yeah. Or at their part-time jobs. Yeah. And then the other reason why you barely see any anime about after people have graduated is because, like, that's like that high school period and college period is the only time when you actually, and that little bit of free time when you're not working or studying, or at school, is like, that's when you can do fun stuff. And, that's kind of why you see so many, so incredibly many anime about clubs. Mm-hmm. Is that's, yeah, that's where a lot of students spend a lot of their time. It's not in class. So yeah, that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions that I can think of. I'm sure there are others, but there are definitely others, but it's hard to think of them on the spot now.
Good. Tommy from AnimeBowl.com had this question. Is there a negative stigma to being an otaku? Or have you, and alternately, I guess, have you managed to hide your fandom?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, there's a negative stigma to it. And I actually made a rant post about this not so long ago. So if you're on my, one of my close friends that is connected to my private Facebook page, you probably saw it. But yeah, it's like, there's a negative stigma to being an otaku in the States, but it is honestly nothing compared to what it is in Japan. This is another misconception, I guess, somewhat related to the last question, is anime is hugely popular in Japan, but the popular stuff is popular. Like, and then everything else is basically for otaku. It's like, that's kind of maybe an overgeneralization, but you know what? I love Studio Ghibli, and I can talk about Studio Ghibli, and every single person I've spoken to here has seen a Studio Ghibli movie. And it's a great icebreaker, because everyone loves Studio Ghibli here. But once you start talking about, like, Mushishi, which, like, I've mentioned a couple times that Mushishi is probably my favorite anime, and I honestly have not met a single person here who's seen it. It's... And the other issue I had was, the second part of your question, have I managed to hide it, is, yeah, I'm pretty vague when people ask me about my personal interests and hobbies. Usually, like, I like to read, which is true. I do like to
read. Visual novels.
Yeah. Well, yeah, reading visual novels. I am reading it's not a commentary. I don't know what you call it, by Scott McKnight. Kind of a theology book. And I do like reading that kind of stuff too. So, I mean, that's true. Sometimes I just say I like watching TV, which is, extremely true in a very narrow sense. So I say things like that, or I study, which is definitely true. I study a lot, pretty boring, but, if people press me for more specific responses, I might mention Studio Ghibli, and only after like a while of knowing someone will I start to kind of mention the specific anime I like. And Japanese people are much the same way. There are several friends I have here who really love anime or Vocaloid or manga or video games, but you know what, I didn't find out about it until after I'd known the people for like a couple weeks.
I wonder how the Japanese, what their mindset is when they see foreigners come to Japan to teach, like yourself, or to intern. I wonder if they're already have the preconception that, oh, this is an otaku, you know, because so many people nowadays, so many young people are going to Japan spurred on by their love of anime, right? And they grow to love the culture because of that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's hard for me to say, especially because I've only been here in Kanazawa, which is really not the place where people go. If you're an anime fan, you don't go to Kanazawa, which is a shame, because I've been here seeing all kinds of things. For example, have you seen Hanasaku Iroha?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that takes place in this prefecture, and actually parts of it take place in Kanazawa, which is super cool. Like, I've been to several of the stores and restaurants that the characters visited in the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is just super cool. But anyway, there's, while all that stuff is here, like, as an anime fan, like, I'm seeing all this stuff. I'm like, oh, I've totally seen samurai houses like this in anime. I've totally seen, like, castle walls structured like this. I've totally seen Kotoji lanterns that look like this. But people go, don't come here for that reason. So I have a very biased opinion. So a lot of foreigners I know here actually don't give a lick about anime. I'm kind of the odd man out. But I can't say about, like, Tokyo, for example. I'm sure a lot of foreigners go there. But then on the other hand, I think a lot of people are kind of scared away whenever they realize how different Japanese culture really is compared to what they saw in anime. Hard to say. What was I going to say? I don't remember.
Well, you know what? At the very least, one thing we found out through this podcast is that if anyone wants to do a Hanasaku Iroha pilgrimage, you're the expert.
Well, yeah, you know what? Come visit me. I'll be gone soon. But if you come in the next month, I'll be here. I'd be happy to give you a tour.
Do you want to tell the folks about your plans after finishing up with Kanazawa area?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for this particular trip?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I'll be spending about 10 days, more or less, in Tokyo, and I am super stoked for it. I'm not a big city person, but, you know what, 10 days is 10 days, and Tokyo is Tokyo. So I'm planning on meeting up with a couple of online Japanese friends of mine, and also meeting up with Kaze, one of the writers of Beneath the Tangles. And we're going to be going on a bit of a tour. He's going to be taking me around Akihabara. So very excited for that. That'll be my first time in that part of Tokyo. And then I'll be doing lots of other touristy things. I'll be visiting a couple other churches and probably helping out while I'm there too. But yes, very excited. Very excited.
Very cool. You know, this is an interesting time in Beneath the Tangles. I think we have 5 writers currently in Japan, if I'm not mistaken. So you, Kaze, 04, R86 and Goldie.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep, yeah. It's 5 of us. There was a time when that would have been more than half of us.
Yeah. By the way, we are closed to new submissions for writers. We're very happy with our really large staff right now. So anyway, moving on. Hey, so
before we do move to the next question, I do want to make one more note about the stigma to otaku, and just to give a little bit of an explanation as to why there is such a stigma here. And well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, there's a much bigger problem with neat or hikikomori people who just are shut-ins, basically. First of all, there's that. There's a much bigger problem with that in Japan, especially because of the aging population and the disparity between the large amount of older people and younger people and a lack of jobs. So there's that. But second, there's still the stigma in the States where anime is kind of associated with either ridiculous over violence or sexuality, especially pornography. But that is magnified many times here in Japan because people are much more familiar and aware of that problem. And also, I had this conversation with Kaze the other day, actually. Unfortunately, a lot of the stereotypes of otaku being hopelessly obsessed with pornography are true, like in Japan. So that it's not just like in the United States, like, oh, you like anime, you mean that hentai stuff? Ha 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 ha, laugh about it, move on with your life. It's like, oh, you really like anime, you probably really like anime pornography too. The chances are pretty high. And so there's always that association, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. So that is the reasoning.
Anime is really expensive in Japan, right?
Absolutely.
I wonder how the neat are able to indulge in their hobbies if they're not working.
You know what? Off the cuff, my answer to that would be their parents are probably working very, very long hours like Japanese people do. They probably have plenty of disposable income because they spend so much time at work. And the Neats have no bills, really. So it can all go into that hobby. I'm guessing that's how they do it. Because, yes, anime is so expensive here. And anime goods, too. Like, I think I bought the entire first season of Mushishi, which at the time was the entire series of Mushishi, for $16 brand new, unopened in the US. And you know how much it costs here in Japan? It's like going on $100. granted, that's Blu-ray, but the packaging is a heck of a lot cooler. But you know what? It's not $100 cooler.
Do you get any extras with the DVDs there? I know with like music, for instance, you might get a meet and greet ticket, something like that. But what about the DVDs?
You know what? I think that kind of thing happens. Japan's much form over function again. Japan places much more emphasis on their special editions and their packaging and their extras. Like I remember, I bought a live, well, if you want to call it live, Hatsune Miku concert on Blu-ray. Excuse me, that I imported last year, and it came with like a little bag. Like, it just like in the box, it has the little slot for the Blu-ray, I think the slot for the booklet, and then a little cardboard box that fits inside the bigger cardboard box. And you pull it out, and it says like, I don't know, special pouch or something. Actually, it says special porch. It's supposed to say special pouch, but it says special porch on it.
That's perfect. That's how it should be.
And then you open it up, and it's just like this little drawstring bag that has Miku on it. It's like, what am I supposed to do with this? I have no idea, but you know, it looks pretty nice. I don't know. So they do that kind of stuff all the time. Which is pretty slick in its own way, but man, not worth the extra price tag.
With all the cost with the high cost of merchandise over there, have you purchased anything?
You know what? I held out for a month before I finally gave in. I bought two little Nendoroids. I bought Asakura Yoko. Is that her first name, I think?
Yes, it is.
Whatever. From Haruhi, yeah. And I bought Kanbe Kotori, one of the main characters from Rewrite, which is a key visual novel. And I'll be honest, I only bought them because I found them at a used anime goods store. And in the used anime goods store, I found them in the clearance bin. So they were 100 yen each, so it was $2 for both of them. They're both characters from things I really, really like a lot. I sorted through a lot of them for like 20 minutes before I finally found ones I actually cared about. But even at the used place, I will say that at the used place, the anime figures are cheaper than they are in the U.S. I found some actually really nice ones for like 500 yen that if you go to a convention or something, would go for like $20 probably.
Right.
But everything else is super expensive. The special edition games, which is like all they have, all the CDs, it's all pretty ridiculous.
You know, I know you're not in Tokyo or Akihabara or anything like that, but do you can you get a sense, being in Japan, what series or what anime series or properties are popular right now over there as compared to here in the States?
Well, based on my limited knowledge and the couple friends I have that actually keep up with anime, it seems to me that outside of the explicitly otaku, people are generally a couple seasons behind. Or at least a season behind. Because it's actually much harder to consume the media here, legally, I should say. Because it's actually on TV. So you have to have TV. Which, like in the United States, that means like having a service provider, like cable or whatever. And a lot of them air really late at night. So a lot of people are a couple seasons behind because that's what's easier to get to. I would say, though, out of the current season, there's a big, it's called Animate or Animeito, a big anime shop, and then it's connected to several others, and a maid cafe in downtown Kanazawa. That's really the only place you can go for that kind of stuff. But first thing you go in, there's a giant setup stand for Fate Stay Night. So that's certainly very popular. As far as other currently running shows, I think you always have just like the One Pieces,
right?
That always have people following them. Always.
Okay, now rewind for a second. Did you go to the Maid Cafe? That's what I want to know.
I've been to it, not in operating hours.
Oh, okay.
They have really, really specific hours. It's like weekdays, like 3 hours a day or something. And then weekends, I think, are a little bit longer. I actually just looked them up the other day. I am planning on going at some point. I'm not going by myself, though.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. I mentioned it at church one time as kind of a joke.
Of course.
Because
Cafe's church, you know?
There's one lady at church. Who I went out with her and her husband and another friend, and we went to a place with really, really awesome omuraisu. And I kept joking about how I wanted to have them write Daisuki on it. So that's been kind of a running joke. And so I mentioned the maid cafe that I found to her. And then, complete surprise to me, a lady at church, a Japanese lady at church, who was sitting next to her, is like, there's a maid cafe? We should totally go sometime. And I was like, I thought she was joking. I'm like, wait, you serious? She's like, yeah, sure, let's go. So at some point, I'll probably be going with her. We'll figure that out.
Make sure you do that. Snap a picture of that that rice omelet there. So, all right. Let's get to this last set of questions here, which have to do with kind of the sites of Japan. Our own medieval otaku asks, what historic sites have you been able to visit in Japan besides shrines and temples? And in fact, why don't you also talk about any shrines and temples?
Well, Kanazawa is an awesome city. You should all come. It's not huge. It's 500,000 people. I'm trying to think, what is a similar city? I think someone told me that's about the same size as Cleveland, more or less. The thing with Kanazawa is it's super compact. So it's like the downtown is downtown. And then as soon as you leave downtown, it's like suburbs. And as soon as you leave suburbs, it's just farmland. it's all pretty close together. From my university's in the middle of the mountains, middle of nowhere. But a 90-minute walk gets you to downtown where, like, for example, that anime shop is. In addition to that, it's also a very old city, and it also escaped any and all bombing in World War II, which is what devastated a lot of historical areas in Japan. So, Kanazawa has some awesome things just all over the place, like loads and loads of temples. There's even an area called Teramachi, which literally means temple town. or Temple Street, kind of. It's just lines and lines and lines of temples. There are onsen all over the place, and not like onsen attached to hotels where you stay at the hotel and that's how you get to the onsen. Onsen is a hot spring, in case you don't know. There's always a hot spring episode in like every anime. But they're all over the place, and they're all standalone. Like, you go in, you pay, like, $5, and then you just spend as much time in the onsen as you want, and then you leave. And it is awesome, by the way. So I've visited one so far. I'm planning to visit a few more. I visited a couple temples, although I don't particularly like the temples that much. I'll just be super frank. I kind of feel like temples are a little gaudy. They have so much, like, gold and ornamentation and... the other thing is I don't really understand it very much. Shinto to me is a little bit easier to grasp because it's just so much more broad. Buddhism is much more specific and doctrinal, I guess. A little bit more at odds with Christianity than Shinto is as well, I would say. But that might be a sweeping statement I don't want to make. I don't know.
Well, you made it.
Yeah, I did. Well, we'll move on. I visited a lot of shrines because they were all over the place, as they are with all over Japan. And they range in size from just tiny little, like, doghouse size to giant shrine with torii all over the place. Giant torii. And I saw a Miko shrine maiden and some Shinto priests as well in their full garb, which is pretty awesome. Besides that, though, I've also visited... Kanazawa's kind of big tourist draws are they have Kanazawa Jo, which is Kanazawa Castle, which there's actually no castle there anymore.
It burned down.
But it has a huge, it has a huge, awesome wall with a big bridge, which is really cool. And they've rebuilt parts, like for museum purposes too. They also have Kenrokuen, which is one of the most famous gardens in Japan, and it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. They also have some samurai districts and some geisha districts, which are pretty popular, and they're relatively preserved to how they were hundreds of years ago, which is pretty cool. I've toured those, and that's where you can get some really awesome wagashi, which are the traditional Japanese sweets. If you watch or read Nisekoi, that's what Onodera's family runs, a wagashi store, basically. So I've seen a lot. Part of that is the hospitality of the friends here, and part of that also is the university where I am has a pretty big emphasis on hospitality and tourism. And so I've gone with a lot of classes into the city doing like field work, exploring all these tourist spots. So I've seen a lot of really, really cool, very traditional Japanese stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, that segues nicely into our next question from Andrew of wonderfulcatman.tumblr.com, who asks, what's basically the favorite place you've gone to or seen? And on the opposite end, are there any places you wouldn't want to go to again?
You know what? I've really liked just about everywhere I've visited. I know everyone says you eventually get over the honeymoon period of Shinto shrines because they're all over the place. Like, they're so cool once you get there, and then eventually you're just like, oh, it's another shrine. That's kind of how Japanese people are. I haven't quite gotten to that point yet, but I guess I'm probably getting there. I really like the shrines, but, you know, I am starting to get to the point where if I see a shrine, I'm not immediately drawn to it. And sometimes I'll just keep walking past it. But as far as favorite place, they're all great in different ways. If you like history or Japanese history, you're going to have much more fun here in a city like Kanazawa than if you don't. For example, there's a really famous temple called Ninjadera. That's the nickname. I don't remember what the actual name is. Ninjadera literally means ninja temple. It's kind of like a fake castle built during the Edo period, I believe, when castles were only allowed to be two stories, because presumably, this is my assumption, they were controlling, they were trying to get over the feudal period of Japan. They're centralizing, so they didn't want people building up their own castles again. But this lord built what's called Ninjadera, which looks on the outside like a two-story building, but you go in and it's so convoluted in its design. It's super complex with traps all over the place and lots of levels that are like just layered over each other, so it's actually more than two floors. That was a really cool place. I wouldn't visit... I'm going to change your question a little bit and say I probably won't visit it a third time. I actually... one weekend, a Japanese friend of mine said, you know what, I've never been to Ninjadera, even though I've lived in Kanazawa for years. So why don't we go visit it? So we went, and it cost 800 yen to get in, which... was a little pricey, especially because they actually make you agree to a little waiver that says that the tour will not be given in English. You are not allowed to translate it out loud. like, no talking that will bother the other patrons. Anyway, so we went, and then lo and behold, a couple days later, I went with a student group, and they were going to Ninjadera, so I had to pay 800 more yen to get back into the same place. So I probably won't go there a third time. You know, it was pretty cool the first two times.
Can you tell us a little bit about your, since you enjoyed it so much, your experience with the onsen?
Oh, yes. So every foreigner, I think, has the nerve-wracking experience of first entering the onsen. because Westerners are so unused to being naked in front of other people, even like even close friends and family. Like most foreigners are not comfortable being seen naked. So yeah, you have to get over that first hurdle, which is why a lot of foreigners unfortunately don't visit onsen when they visit Japan, which is a crying shame because it is so great. But anyway, once you get over that, it's really not that big of a deal, and you realize, oh, everyone else is naked too. So yeah, you go in, and it's just like in an anime episode. You get your little stool, you plop yourself down on it, rinse yourself off with the shower head, then you get your soap, and you wash off, and then you really do fill up that bucket with hot water and dump it over yourself. That's how you rinse off. And then after that, you hop in one of the, usually the bigger onsen will have lots of different options, for what to get in. So like the one I went to had a little pool where you lay down like flat and it has jets, and then connected, it had a pool. It's more like a hot tub where you sit in it and it has jets, and next to it, it had a pool that was actually cold water, which is actually not good for you, but, they have it just in case you want to, I guess, quickly cool off between visits to different pools. They had a sauna, and then on your way to the sauna, they actually have a freezer room where I guess you just go in to cool off. I went with a 70-some-year-old man who was my supervisor. He apparently had never seen it before, and he was very confused because he thought it was the sauna. We walk in and we're like, yeah, this is not a sauna, but there's ice on the walls. But the big draw, the one I went to, had an outside pool with this kind of dark water. It almost looked like chocolate. Once you get in, you realize it's clearer than it looks from the outside. But it's supposed to have all these natural minerals that help just with like basically everything in your body. And my miracle story with the onsen is I've had this weird discoloration on my left arm for a couple years. Not itchy, not uncomfortable at all. It just like showed up randomly. I have no idea why, and I could not get rid of it for a couple years. I've literally taken thousands of showers and baths in that amount of time. I hopped in the onsen for like 30 minutes and I got out and it's gone.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my miracle experience. And then usually onsen too, once you get out and you've cooled off, you can go to the kind of the common area outside and you can buy food there, kind of cafeteria style. So I had my first somen noodles, which are the white noodles you see, if you've ever seen flowing noodles where they have the carved out bamboo pipe and they drop the white noodles down it. Those are somen. So that was where I had my first experience with somen noodles. Yeah, it's fantastic. If you ever visit Japan, just get over the embarrassment as fast as you can and visit an onsen. You won't regret it, I think.
And you also heard it here. Any type of skin malady will be cured by hot springs in Japan. So
maybe not make that that sweeping of a statement. But hey,
you heard it here first.
If you have a strange brown discoloration on your left arm and it doesn't hurt and it's not itchy or anything, you know what? It might just go away.
All right, enough of the medical advice. Let's let's continue on. Actually, you know what? I'll go ahead and close this with one more question of my own.
Sure.
You've still got quite a bit of time in Japan, but what do you think, what is it that you think you'll miss most when you return back to the States?
You know what? I think you said it already. It's easily the people. I mean, there are plenty of other things that I love about Japan that are just kind of cool, I guess, like konbini food, Japanese food in general, hospitality, the cleanliness of the city, well, being able to go to like an animate just kind of wander around and then do all the sightseeing I've been able to do and speak Japanese because I really love learning the language and practicing. But when it comes down to it, I am absolutely going to be devastated when I leave next month because of all of the people that I've met here. And you know what? Some of that I have to thank for being plugged in with all these Christian connections at these churches, because everyone is just so incredibly kind and loving. I've made connections with so many people that I know I'm going to have a very, very difficult time tearing myself away from Kanazawa come next month when I have to leave.
That's awesome. It's good to hear that the people there have been so warm to you, and that you've had such a good experience. So, well, I'll go ahead and wrap us up then. Thank you for joining us, JP. We appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
And thank you to all our readers out there who submitted all these wonderful questions. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of The Tangles. Again, it was great having JP over there and me sitting in the chair this month. We have one more special kind of a summer podcast coming up for next month. And then after that, we'll return back to JP hosting again. And if you'd like to read more of our work or even listen to more of our podcasts, be sure to check out beneaththetangles.com. I hope you tune in again next month for The Tangles.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of The Tangles, official companion podcast to beneaththetangles.com. Be sure to check out our full site for more articles and analyses on the intersection of otaku culture and faith. If you would like to submit a question, send an email to thetangles@outlook.com. Also, be sure to follow our Twitter, @AnimeTangles, and like our Facebook page, Beneath the Tangles, and rate and review The Tangles on iTunes. Featured opening and closing songs are Japanese Dream by Duke Ellington's Orchestra and Blue Piano Stomp by Johnny Dodds, available in the public domain. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for The Tangles.
Cool. Well, I'm ready whenever then.
Were you recording already?
Yes.
Okay. I have to get my JP voice down for that. Okay, let me try this.